Good morning. It's Thursday, April 30th, 2009. You're listening to the Brain Labor Report.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon's solidarity. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your copay,
war on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization,
war on the workers.
And cooperation,
war on the workers.
When they call you a team,
war on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war. Flexibility.
War on the workers.
Every working stiff can see.
War on the workers.
Now when they poison your water.
War on the workers.
Don't go like lambs to the slaughter.
War on the workers.
And when they foul up the air.
War on the workers.
You gotta show that you care.
War on the workers.
When they talk WTO.
War on the workers.
You best be screaming hell no.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. It's a war on public education. It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Yeah, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time, sisters and brothers, you know it's time right now. I said it's time we started calling the shots.
Okay, about time we started calling the shots. There's a war on the worker. That was Ann Feeney. Starts off every edition of the Brain Labor Report with that song, War on the Workers. This is the Brain Labor Report. This is Wes Brain. I'm host of the show.
This is Jason Houck. I'm the engineer.
Yes, coming with to you this morning here in Ashland, Oregon. By gosh, if you're listening to us live in Ashland over the airwaves, you're listening to KSKQ 94.9 FM here in Ashland, Oregon. We're a project of a multicultural Association of Southern Oregon. If you're listening to us in Uganda, you would be listening to us via the internet, www.kskq.org. Anywhere on the planet, a good connection on Mars, in fact, you could listen to the Brain Labor Report. We come to you Monday through Friday. We're a half-hour show. We're 7 a.m. Pacific time on the West Coast. That's 10 o'clock back east. We're trying to wake up this morning. Hopefully, you're awake back there. And we talk about the issues of the day for ordinary working people. Lots of issues. Unemployment is so high. Unions are not well represented in this country any longer. And you know what we find is that more and more people are working for less and less. The idea The American dream is the idea I'm thinking of right now. That idea that if you work hard and, you know, get up every morning, put your boots on and go and work hard, that you, in fact, can realize the American dream. I don't think that that is a reality anymore for so many people. We talk about these issues. The rich are getting richer. The poor are getting poorer. That's the issues of the Brain Labor Report. Today, we're going to be talking to Benji Lewis, a very brave soldier who is being called back, I think his third tour of duty, and said, no, hell no, I won't go. And he's caught a lot of fire over that. And by the way, what's that have to do with labor? I'll tell you what, soldiers are workers. You better believe it. They work hard. And we'll be talking to Benji Lewis about his very brave decision to say, no, I won't go, and what that's all about. So a little later on in the show, we'll do that. But always near the top of our half-hour show, we like to bring you the Workers Independent News. This is 3 minutes of cutting-edge news out of Madison, Wisconsin, syndicated around the country, but nowhere in all of Southern Oregon can you hear this other than right here on KSKQ 94.9 FM. So for Thursday, the 30th of April, 2009, here is the Workers Independent News.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. According to the Associated Press, Fiat will sign the deal forming a partnership with Chrysler. Major banks have already agreed to substantially reduce Chrysler's debt, and the United Auto Workers Union has agreed to concessions. All these things were conditions set by the Obama administration for Chrysler to get more federal loans and avoid bankruptcy. GM continues to deal with its creditors in an effort to cut its debts as it talks with the UAW to resolve outstanding retiree health care and other issues. GM's bid to avoid bankruptcy hinges on reaching agreements with the union and with its creditors by a June 1st deadline imposed by the Obama administration. Workers are still reeling from the economy as new numbers show U.S. gross domestic product contracted by 6.1% between January and March. In the final quarter of 2008, it shrank by 6.3%. It's the worst economic decline since 1958. Business capital investment dropped by 38% in the first quarter. For workers, this means that job losses will continue this year. More than 5 million workers have lost jobs so far during this recession. More than 5,000 workers are killed on the job every year in the U.S. Another 50,000 die each year from occupation-related diseases. At the National Labor College in Maryland, Labor Secretary Hilda Solis marked Workers' Memorial Day this week by vowing to ramp up safety enforcement for workers on the job.
When it comes to workplace protection, workplace health, and workplace safety, let me be clear. The Department of Labor is back in the enforcement business. Under my watch, enforcement of our labor laws will be intensified to provide an effective deterrent to employers who put their workers' lives at risk.
Yesterday marked 100 days for the nation's 44th president, but in that time, what has he accomplished for workers? Jesse Russell has more.
The AFL-CIO has released a list highlighting a number of landmark moments in President Barack Obama's first 100 days. One of the standout moments for workers was the passage of the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. The act helps level the playing field when it comes to gender pay equity. He also established a new task force chaired by Vice President Joe Biden, dedicated to raising the standard of living in the middle class. Obama used his executive power to erase setbacks for workers of the Bush administration, including reversing an order that limited union representation on federal contracts. He has also expressed a commitment to infrastructure by setting a course that will support the development of green jobs, which could potentially create a new industry for middle-class workers.
Detroit takes another hit as American Axle idles its largest plant in mid-July. The company depends on auto manufacturers. GM accounts for 75% of American Axle's business, Chrysler 10%. 500 workers are being let go. More work will be transferred to Mexico. After the plant's shutdown, American Axle will just have 232 employees left in Michigan. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And you're listening to the Brain Labor Report. Last day of April. I can't believe it. My gosh, tomorrow's May Day. May Day, May Day, May Day. I'll tell you what May Day is about this May Day. May Day is about, I know that UNITE is organizing a march and rally in downtown Medford, Alba Park, 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. great time to show some solidarity for Hispanic workers. I know UNITE represents Spanish workers, and I know they are exploited. Very badly they're exploited, you know. If you listen to the right-wingers, they talk about the illegal immigrants. If you listen to the big agricultural, they don't like to talk about it. They like to hire those illegal immigrants and abuse them because they're illegals and they can exploit them. And it's a horrible situation we have in this country. That's the focus tomorrow. It's May Day, International Labor Day. I don't know if most folks know that. We're kind of hidden from that in this country. But, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to see if we can get Benji Lewis, that soldier, very brave soldier, on the phone. We're going to play a song while we try to make the phone connection. When Johnny Comes Marching Home. That's David Rovix. Let's play that song right now. Okay, here we go.
Got off the plane, looked at no one. Walked down the tarmac in the direction of nowhere. Followed the sun as it was setting. Glad to be done with all the bloodletting. There were no banners for the proud and the few. Just workers in airports that do what they do. Fuel up the planes, unload the bags. Along with the coffins, all covered in flags. Johnny came marching home. The town he was from was a dead little place. So he looked for a job somewhere off base. In the city of pawn shops, hotels and bars, gas stations, strip clubs, highways and cars. He went to a dive, ordered a beer. Said turn the music up loud so it's all that I hear. Try to rewind, turn back the years, stop the explosions between my ears. When Johnny came marching home, the jobs were all shit, the beer was cheap. Besides, there was no other way he could sleep. Still, the screams and the guns would wake him at night. He was always on edge and ready to fight. When he closed his eyes, he would just see the face of a woman he killed in some faraway place. Over and over, the white of her eye and her final and terrified cry. When Johnny came marching home. Joints and a thump in the heart. The doctor just told him it's all in his head, but he couldn't stop drinking or get out of bed. And with no place to go but the wrong way, it was a shock to his ears when he heard himself say over and over to anyone within range, "Hey, mister, can you spare some change?" When Johnny came marching.
Okay, when Johnny came marching home. That's David Rovix, and we sure enjoy David Rovix on the Brain Labor Report. Thank you, David Rovix. I think we have Benji Lewis on the telephone now. Benji, can you hear us this morning?
I can. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being our guest. I'm going to tell folks right now, I called Benji yesterday afternoon, must have been around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I said, Benji, I said, we'd like to get you as a guest on the Brain Labor Report this morning. He said, okay. He said, when? I said, this morning. And that was probably right out of the blue for him, I'm sure it was, on a very short notice. Again, let's start out by just thanking you for taking your time this morning, Benji Lewis, and being our guest. I want to find out a little bit about you. I know you're coming down here for a couple of talks in the next several days. We will speak about that and alert people to what that's all about. But just to get us started, Benji Lewis, a little bit about yourself, a little bit of background. Who are you? And please, for our listeners this morning, Benji.
All right, well, that's a long story, so I'll try to keep it short. But
okay.
The short biography is, you know, I came from a military family, and I was pretty much immersed in that military tradition from a young age. So I ended up joining the Marine Corps when I was 17, and I shipped off to boot camp and did 4 years active service in the Marine Corps with two tours to Iraq, including the first siege of Fallujah. And then I got out of the Marine Corps and thought I was getting on with my life and had put the war and a lot of other issues behind me. And last October, I got notified that I was going to be publicly, I was going to be reactivated. And so, you know, that was like the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. And pretty much immediately, I began publicly refusing activation, even before I was officially activated. And I went down to Kansas City, Missouri to report to the screening muster to document for the record that I was able-bodied and that I was going to be refusing service. And I've been running a whole campaign, and including, you know, why I'm coming to the Rogue Valley this weekend, the Weekend Say No speaking tour, where I've been really advocating for GI rights and getting the information to other IR service members out there who may be facing involuntary activation. And thus far, it's been incredibly successful. And in the middle of planning for our big press release on my reactivation day on May 18th, I got a phone call on April 16th when I was doing an honorarium in Olympia, Washington. And the Marine Corps notified me that my orders were canceled, so I no longer face any sort of legal persecution from the military.
Wow. Well, what a turnaround for you. Now, I'd like to understand a little more, and for our listeners, too, certainly we don't have a draft. Some would say we kind of have a backdoor draft with so many people unemployed. A lot of people are desperate. They're lining up to join the military right now. But I wanted to, so you might want to comment on that, Benji. But in particular, I'm interested in this current situation we have right now because, and please help me understand this. I think it's such that if you're in the military, they could keep calling you back for redeployment as many times as they want, up to, is it like 4 years or something like that? Would you explain that to for our listeners, please?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's a typical signing agreement by the Department of Defense where you have 4 years on active duty and you have 4 years on inactive duty in the IRR, the Individual Ready Reserve. And this has been around, you know, for quite some time. But, of course, like you said, the backdoor draft, as we moved away from the conscription army days of Vietnam, where we had a lot of people that didn't want to be there, didn't have to be there, so there was a lot more resistance. I mean, to nullify that whole argument, all you got to do is switch to an all-volunteer army. And, of course, our all-volunteer army has evolved into a sort of mercenary army of America's disadvantage, so to speak, or an economic draft. So we see a lot of people that aren't doing so well financially or, yeah, like you said, you know, looking to go to college, looking to get a spot up in life that joined the military more out of necessity than anything else. And when the Bush Doctrine came into play, particularly after 2001, I mean, this service, this IRR service, that used to be sort of a pool for volunteers or subs. You could help out in the range, or if you had a specialty MOS, occupational specialty, you would get called back. And now just thousands and thousands of people are getting called back. So one of the problems we're seeing with post-traumatic stress is that people are going through 2-3 deployments while they're on active duty. And unlike Vietnam, when they're home, they're not done. They have it hanging over their head. So they can't even begin to process sort of the psychological trauma that had happened to them before they wake up one morning and they're back in the middle of it.
Well, okay, lots of things you brought up there, lots of issues to contemplate here. And Benji, about yourself a little bit more. I know, I think you're in Corvallis, Oregon. Are you an Oregonian? Did you grow up in the state here? Please, a little more about Benji.
You know, I'm not an Oregonian, though I wouldn't mind being one at all. I grew up in Minnesota, so I moved up here out of Southern California to get back into the beautiful green and the more temperate weather. But I was born on an Air Force base in Lubbock, Texas, and I lived there briefly and grew up in Minnesota and in Dallas, Texas. Moved around quite a bit. Like I said, my father was career military, and I found myself in Southern California for basic training, and then in 29 Palms, California, right outside of Death Valley, where I was stationed. And after spending 4 years in the desert climate, I moved up to Oregon, and I'm loving it.
Okay. Well, we love it here, too. We're pretty proud of our state. And, okay, so you've been two tours of duty. My gosh, was there, and I already read the article in the paper here, but maybe folks didn't, was there a point in time when you changed your mind about this war in Iraq and basically your support of it? Please tell us the story.
You know, I mean, I get this question a lot too. You know, what was the one point? What was the one thing that changed your mind? And certainly there are a few notable instances, but obviously it was an accumulation of lots of different events that happened to me in the Marine Corps. And truth be told, I didn't really start becoming politically aware until much later, or even really reflective upon my service in the Marine Corps, until even after my second deployment to Iraq. And then I would start reflecting back on things like Fallujah, where I was encountering all these civilians because I was speaking Arabic, and I was acting as a translator for my platoon, and I was talking to these people and hearing their stories. And, you know, even going back to remembering, you know, the first time that I had been told, without seeing the results because I was on a mortar system, the first time that I had been told that I had killed anybody. And, you know, I wasn't able to process that emotion or that thought until really years later when I had the capacity, the emotional capacity to start understanding it, one, and two, because we really weren't allowed any sort of time for reflection or decompression or anything like that, because we're always mission focused. So, you know, I remember when I was in Fallujah for the first time, and this is one of the stories I tell on my talks, and my sergeant came running up, and we're been up for several days at this point, and we're at our first really active firing position. My platoon sergeant comes running up to me and goes, "Lewis, we just popped your cherry." I said, "I'm sorry, sergeant." And he said, "You just killed three people." And before that could even sink in, before I could even realize really, you know, the impact or the gravity of his words, already I was on another fire mission. So without consciously thinking, I'm already moving because of the training and the conditioning. And I'm back on the mortar system, and I'm putting more rounds into Fallujah, you know, compounding the problem.
Sure.
But not even really realizing it.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, it was experiences like that, and also experiences, I mean, my big turning point, I think, when I was really starting to reflect was when I spent a year as an urban combat instructor. Now, after two tours in Iraq and almost 3 years in the Marine Corps, I'm watching these 17, 18, 19-year-old kids going through my classes that were me just 3 years previous, that had all the same misconceptions, that were all singing the same party line. And, you know, kind of seeing the rampant, like, racism that was involved with Marine Corps training and seeing these kids dive into all these misconceptions that I believed, it got me to wondering about brainwashing and military indoctrination. Was it really true? And, you know, eventually I determined for myself that it was.
Wow. Well, that's quite an experience you've been through, and you've been through a lot. And you're going to be through it, going through it the rest of your life. Let's talk about that for just a minute. And what do you know about the post-traumatic stress syndrome? I know myself, I spoke to you very briefly on the phone yesterday when we set this up to talk to you this morning, Benji. And I know coming out of an era a little younger than you are, I graduated from Sutherland High School in 1970. I did not go to Vietnam, but in fact, certainly people of my age did, as you well know. And I was a fireman for 16 and a half years. And, oh, my God, I will not go into detail, but some of the most traumatic memories I have involve our Vietnam vets. And, yes, I've been on Vietnam vets who've committed suicide. And I understand how that stays, how the war is hell, stays with people for so many years. Your understanding of that and a quick comment on that? We got just about 4.5 minutes to go, Benji.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's important, just like you said, that post-traumatic stress isn't just a combat-related sort of ailment. I mean, for example, in the anti-war movement, with a lot of veterans, we'll see a lot of rape victims that like to come in and help and participate because there's a mutual understanding with traumatic memories. And traumatic memories aren't stored in the normal neural centers of the brain. And in fact, because of that, they tend to bypass a lot of our standard functionings, like our language processors and emotional processors, things like that. So, you know, if a vet's working in a workshop and he gets frustrated and he throws a wrench against the wall and he calms down and he goes picks it up and gets back to work, you know, in military culture, that's no big deal. That sort of thing happens all the time. It was just the body's way of expressing a traumatic memory that the brain couldn't, you know, a rational reaction to an insane situation. Or we've got this big stigma in American culture where if it's not dinner talk, we shouldn't be able to talk about it. And, I mean, I think the implications for our future, especially with all the vets recycling through Afghanistan and Iraq and this very extended war on terror, that the consequences for reintegrating these people into the social fabric of our American communities could be pretty consequential.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. I would hope, in fact, this is the world that I see right now, Benji. I mentioned Vietnam and now certainly this horrible illegal war in Iraq. I would think that for returning vets, there's a better atmosphere now. And what I'm thinking about is this. I know that lots and lots of people, very, very strongly against this war, are open arms to supporting our vets. And I hope that this next few years down the road, we'll see a culture that will be understanding. And by the way, Benji, people like you are key to this, absolutely key to this for the future to be better for the returning vets. But I hope in my heart that we have a culture that will be embracing people who are going to have problems years and years down the road. Comment to that. We've got just 2 minutes left to go, Benji.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, Wes. And in fact, I mean, that's also one of the giant misconceptions that have been sort of spun on us by mass media and the policymakers is what I've seen in my experience, even really in the Marine Corps without knowing it, is that most of my support came from people who were against the war. The majority of the people that support the troops were the people that were not pro-mission, were not in favor of the legal invasion of Iraq, and are not in favor of the supposedly good war in Afghanistan. And, I mean, those are the people that sent us our care packages, and those are the people that we really came home to. And, like you said, home with open arms, so it's a good feeling.
Very, very good. Just about a minute left to go. Good time for an infomercial. If you're interested in listening to Benji Lewis this morning, please know he's going to be here on Friday, 1 o'clock, at the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. They're putting this on. It'll be at the Ashland Library at 1 o'clock on Friday. Okay, on Saturday, 3 o'clock, over in Medford at the Medford Library. Citizens for Peace and Justice are involved with the event there. 3 o'clock, Medford, the main branch of the library. library. And then at 2 p.m. on Sunday at a private residence in Grants Pass, 737 Northwest Kinney Street in Grants Pass. So if you are as excited listening to this very brave man, great having you this morning on the phone, Benji, please come to one of these events, learn more about what it takes to stand up and be brave, and in this case, we think do the right thing. Benji, thanks for being our guest this morning on the Brain Labor Report.
Thanks much, Russ. I promise I'll have more jokes in the afternoon.
Okay, when we wake up. Hey, folks, we'll be back again tomorrow. Everybody have a great one. We'll see you tomorrow on the Brain Labor Report. Bye-bye, everybody.